Hello and welcome everyone. In this chapter, I would like to talk about the cephalopods. The reason why they are the first group I pick up is simply because they are one of my favorite groups of animals. And also they are quite interesting actually. So let's just dive straight into it. What are cephalopods? So in the class, cephalopods are included octopuses, squids, cuttlefish, and also the long-standing Nautilus. The reason why I say long-standing is simply because it has been living for millions of years. But in order for us to define the cephalopods, we'll have to zoom out on the taxonomic tree. So cephalopods are part of the animal kingdom, which includes all animals that are multicellular, they can breathe, they can move or reproduce sexually. There's much more to the classification, but this much will satisfy us. So furthermore, the Animalia kingdom is then divided into about 20 different phylums, and cephalopods belong to the phylums of mollusks. So now the question is, what are mollusks? But when we think about the traditional taxonomic hierarchy, we have to think that the kingdom is on top and it has multiple phylums, and then each phylum has multiple classes, and this goes on with order, family, genus, all the way to the species, right? So mollusks actually are a phylum within the kingdom Animalia. And mollusks in itself, they are those invertebrates who have this squishy-like flesh, like the one that we have in our tongue, for example. And they also have a muscular foot, which most of the time sits at the bottom. And they have a mantle that covers their main body cavity. So like the belly part of the organs. So like the stomach, intestine, the heart, and many more. And so what happens to mollusks is that this mantle around the body cavity later starts to produce calcium and create a shell around this body cavity. The reason why I'm mentioning this is because this is a bit important and we're going to talk about it later. But well, not all mollusks still calcify this mantle. To some, it just remained the mantle. To some, it has transformed as a buoyancy chamber. And to some, it doesn't even exist at all. So like, for example, in slugs and octopuses. Or at least not in the exact same way. Now, mollusks are divided into five different class, which one of them are the cephalopods, the group that we are going to talk about today. And the other four class in mollusks are gastropods, bivalves, Scaphopoda and Polyplacophora. And of course, you don't have to remember all this, but what's important is that the gastropods, which are the snails and slugs, are very similar to cephalopods, so squids and octopuses. So I went to look into the differences between these two different classes. And I found out by a simple search that the main difference is that the gastropods, so snails and slugs, mainly live on land, and cephalopods, which are octopuses and squids, are exclusively marine species, so they only live in the ocean. To some degree, that might be right, but it's actually not the real driver of the differences between them. You have to think in a way that for the classification or the systematics, which is the science behind it, to make sense, it cannot just be land and water, the differences between the two groups of species. But instead, it has to be morphological differences. And by morphology, I mean shape has to be different. Maybe they have different organs. Maybe the way the blood flows is different, or maybe the neurological system, and so on, you get it. So I went to dig for more, and I found out that there is plenty of anatomical and behavioral differences between these two groups of species. For the most part, the octopuses and squids have a closed circulatory system, while snails and slugs have an open circulatory system. Now, this is very important because the circulatory systems indicates a level in the evolution scale, and the most evolved species have a closed circulatory system. Now, what does it mean, a closed or an open circulatory system? A closed circulatory system is what we humans have, for example. So the blood flows through veins and capillaries, and it is also determined by a high pressure system. So blood flows from high pressure to the low pressure, and the exchange of oxygen or the other nutrients happens in the same way through diffusion. High pressure of oxygen goes to lower pressure of oxygen and vice versa. High pressure of carbon dioxide goes into lower pressure of carbon dioxide. In contrast, in the open circulatory system, the blood flows through the aorta, but it doesn't have designated veins or capillaries. So it ends up in this big pool full of blood called sinuses, where tissues and organs are bathing there, so to say. So basically, the tissues and organs are bathing in this pool or chamber full of blood, where the aorta is like the tap water that brings in blood from the heart. And this is how they actually manage to get all the nutrients, by bathing in this pool. Now, I know that this might sound disturbing, but if you think of the size of these animals, the gastropods, so snails and slug, are quite small compared to the cephalopods, so squids and octopuses, which actually have a wider range of size, and they can also end up in like huge sizes. Like in the case of the giant squid that can go up to 13 meters long for a female. So if you are a 13 meters long female squid wandering in the ocean, you need a circulatory system that you would rely on. A system that will deliver all the nutrients and the oxygen into your muscle precisely and accurately. So all in total, this makes sense. More on this, I found out a paper that describes the different energy requirement of species. And they concluded that even with the same circulatory system, the bigger the animal is, or the more active the animal is, the higher will be the pressure moving blood through the system. This is also true for those groups of species which have a closed circulatory system, which means that the heart will pump in a higher pressure and the exchange of blood will become more frequent as the fluid, in this case it's the blood, pushes other fluids. So in this regard, I'd like to believe that this is the system which allowed cephalopods, so octopuses and squids, to become even larger and more active as we see them today. Actually, this brings us to the second difference between these two groups, which is behavior in sense of mobility. So most of cephalopods are active swimmers and they utilize the three-dimensional space of the water column. They actively swim by powerful jet propulsion using the muscles in the mantel, so basically the abdominals, by squeezing it, so basically contraction and release. They also have migrational pattern. On the other hand, movement of gastropods is strictly localized and their life is basically not as active, leaving them with little to nothing in terms of migrational pattern. So now this is generalized and you can find some gastropods that can have longer migrations than others, but it's nothing compared to the cephalopods. What you can remember out of this is that the cephalopods are closer to fish in terms of behaviors and dynamics. The third main difference is that cephalopods are well known for their intelligence, and they can display complex and versatile behavior, something that is not quite common in gastropods. So they can solve complex problems by using tools in the marine environment. For example, squids are negatively buoyant, which means they sink down the water column if they're not actively swimming. Most of the squids, what they do to fight the negative buoyancy is that they dissolve ammonium in their tissues, which makes them neutral buoyant and reduces the energetic costs of actively swimming. So they don't have to swim all the time, basically. Also, octopuses have the same issues, although most of them live at the bottom of the ocean, yet some of them travel up in the water column. And what they do is that they trap a gas bubble in their body to help them maintain the neutral buoyancy. These complex behaviors are rare to non-existent in gastropods. Well, since I touched the buoyancy a bit, I'll explain the different types of buoyancy mechanisms in cephalopods and the calcium shells involved in it. There's an easy way to remember this. There is, in general, three types of chambers that exist in cephalopods. So first, the one that we see in Nautilus, where the calcified shell surrounds the body of the animal. In Nautilus' case, the shell has multiple chambers, and the animal occupies only one, or like the first chamber. The rest of the chambers are used as buoyancy control for the animal by adding or removing gas in the chamber. The way it does that is through regulating the fluid gas ratio in the chamber, depending on depth and the pressure of the water. And the gas that is dissolved is nitrogen rich, and it is created through splitting nitrogen from oxygen in a chemical process inside their body. The second type of shell is the one that we see in cuttlefishes. So basically, the shell now is not external, but it has been transformed into a shell inside the body cavity, and it still has the function of buoyancy control through gas diffusion from the vessels into the chamber, but it has lost the ability of protection, so it's not protecting the animal anymore. And then we have the third type of shell, which is the one that we see in squids, where due to the evolution, this shell is not calcified in the same way anymore, but it still exists. And it exists in a chitinous form, so it's made out of chitin. And chitin is a type of cell that, for example, the wings of the fly are made out of. So in principle, the shell is reduced in strength, so it doesn't have this strong calcium. And in the squids and octopuses, it also does not serve as a buoyancy device anymore. Well, so we've reached the end, and to summarize, I would say that cephalopods biologically are closely related to gastropods, where open and closed circulatory systems are the main driver of the difference. But ecologically, cephalopods are closer to fishes. Through evolution, the protective shell of the cephalopods has been reduced, and so did its function. And lastly, the cephalopods display complex behavior and can solve complex problems using the tools in the surrounding environment. So thanks a lot, guys, for listening to this episode. I will furthermore dive deeper into cephalopods and explore more of their anatomical differences and what makes them, basically. So stay tuned, guys, and follow for more and share this with your friends.